This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about artificial intelligence from calendar weeks 25 and 26. Frenis supports ICT and tech providers with AI ecosystem strategy by delivering independent vendor assessment, build versus buy analysis, and ecosystem intelligence that prevents expensive mistakes and positions the providers competitively. You can find more info in the description.
Top artificial intelligence trends seen across LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. That is our focus for today. But before we really get into it, I want you to just imagine a scenario for a second. Let's say you're a banking executive, right?
Okay, I'm picturing it.
And a customer applies for a loan online. An AI agent gets the application, cross-references all the internal databases, flags the applicant for potential fraud, denies the loan, and then actually updates their permanent credit record. And it does all of this in exactly 11 seconds.
Wow. 11 seconds.
Right. Zero humans reviewed the file. Zero humans signed off. Now imagine you get sued tomorrow for discriminatory lending practices. Who is legally responsible? Is it you? Is it the developer who built the model? The vendor who sold you the software?
I mean, that is a terrifying question. And for a lot of organizations right now, the honest answer is just nobody knows.
Exactly. And that is exactly why we are doing this deep dive today. We are pulling directly from curated LinkedIn insights shared by ICT and tech professionals to map out what is actually happening on the ground right now.
Yeah.
And my mission for you listening to this deep dive is to help you realize one fundamental truth. The era of, you know, AI experimentation, it's officially over.
It really is.
We are firmly in the reality of 2026. The playground has been paved over. That whole honeymoon phase of, oh, let's see what this chatbot can write, that's gone. We've transitioned into a strict era of enterprise governance, geopolitical sovereignty, and just hard, measurable business value.
You can really feel the shift in tone across the industry. It's palpable. I mean, we are moving from asking, what can this technology theoretically do, to asking, how do we control it? Who is legally liable for it? And is it actually driving a concrete return on investment?
Right.
And those are significantly harder questions to answer.
They are. And looking at the discussions from the past couple of weeks, you can kind of see the panic setting in around compliance.
Yeah.
Because AI governance has morphed from this conceptual PowerPoint deck into a rigorous, unforgiving operating discipline.
Oh, absolutely. And the catalyst here is obviously the EU AI Act enforcement deadline.
Yes. Staring us down on August 2nd, 2026.
Right. Tom S. made a brilliant point on LinkedIn recently about this exact thing. He specifically warned financial institutions that are using AI for things like anti-money laundering, transaction monitoring, or fraud detection. He basically said you have to build real governance before that August 2026 date, because the gap between a company just saying, hey, we use AI, and being able to actually prove to a regulator that we have AI governance, that gap is about to become incredibly expensive.
Yeah, when you look under the hood of what Tom is describing, the operational reality is just staggering. It is no longer enough to just let an AI work through a queue of compliance alerts. You have to document its logic. You have to mathematically prove that human oversight is real.
Not just a rubber stamp.
Right, not just someone clicking approve. Uh-huh. And you have to defend that model's logic to an external auditor.
Which is a huge heavy lift. And to translate that overwhelming requirement into action, Kuba Sarmak highlighted a highly practical guide recently by Anna Tujikowska and her co-author.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, it's great because it strips away all the legal fluff and it turns AI Act compliance into concrete operating steps.
So what did those steps actually look like for, say, the IT and compliance teams who were doing the actual work?
Well, it means strictly classifying your AI systems by risk level, for starters. And then thoroughly mapping out exactly who the end users are and continuously monitoring for model drift and bias over time.
Right.
It's no longer about a legal team just asking, are we technically a provider or a deployer of this software? It's about executing a granular technical inventory and assigning hard individual ownership to every single algorithm running in your stack.
Which naturally brings us to the financial stakes, because getting that ownership wrong is going to cost you massively.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
IO and Cyprian Popa pointed out that everyone talks about the massive 35 million euro maximum fine under the EU AI Act, but very few people understand how it's actually applied.
Right, it's not arbitrary.
Exactly. Popa noted there is an actual deterministic formula the regulator uses to calculate these fines. It's not just a random number a judge throws at you. It takes into account the severity of the infringement, the volume of users affected, your failure to implement mitigation steps.
Which means if your CFO doesn't understand the inputs of that legal calculus, They can't properly provision the risk on the balance sheet.
Exactly. You are essentially flying your entire AI stack blind.
And look, if you are an executive listening outside of Europe, do not think you are exempt from this. Zuria Nagadia and Sadio Jonas both explicitly warned that these fines, which can reach up to 7% of your global revenue, by the way, they apply to any company, anywhere in the world, that uses AI to serve European customers.
7% of global revenue is just, it's staggering.
It is. If you are a fintech startup in Lagos or a US-based retail executive deploying a dynamic pricing tool, if your AI model processes European data or its outputs are used in the EU, you are fully subject to this law. Extraterritorial reach is the defining feature of modern tech regulation.
I have to push back a little here, though. I hear all of this, and part of me just wonders, isn't this really just GDPR 2.0?
How do you mean?
I mean, it feels like we're just gearing up for a massive check-the-box exercise. You know, a bunch of consent banners, updated privacy policies, some legal paperwork that ultimately just slows everybody down without fundamentally changing the tech itself.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. It's a very common reaction, but it's fundamentally incorrect.
Mm.
AI regulation operates on an entirely different mechanical level than data privacy.
Okay, unpack that for me.
Kevin L. meticulously broke this down on LinkedIn recently. He points specifically to Article 10 of the AI Act. Under this article, active data governance, continuous bias checks, and rigorous data quality are now legal standards. Let that sink in.
Right.
Under GDPR, your job was basically simply to protect the data from being stolen. Under the AI Act, you have to mathematically prove the data you fed your model is representative, relevant, and statistically appropriate for the specific context you're using it in.
Okay, wow. So garbage in, garbage out is no longer just an IT headache or like a technical glitch. It is a strict compliance failure.
Right, exactly. If an AI model makes a biased decision, feeds that output back into its own training data, and compounds that bias over time, breaking that technical cycle is now a legal obligation.
So if the IT department can't just slap a privacy banner on this and call it a day, and the fines are globally enforceable, it means the liability leaps right over middle management and lands directly in the boardroom.
Yep, completely bypasses them.
Which is exactly where this concept of the agentic liability fog comes into play. Shobha Shah posted these 5 hardboard governance questions that corporate directors absolutely need to ask before they approve any major AI project.
Those are so good.
They really were. The two that really struck me were, 1, who owns the business outcome? And 2, what happens when the model is wrong?
And those questions are so critical right now because of how the underlying technology has evolved from generative to agentic. And this ties perfectly back to that 11-second loan scenario we opened with. Solomon Legesse shared that chilling real-world example from Canada. A fully autonomous AI agent declined a loan application in seconds, updated a permanent record, and did it all without human intervention.
Wow.
Jess calls this the agentic liability fog. It's what happens when AI acts autonomously, making real-world decisions, and literally no one in the corporate hierarchy can explicitly name who authorized that specific action.
And if you're listening and you think autonomous agents are just a fringe use case for tech companies, think again. Brad Wolf shared a jaw-dropping statistic. Agentic AI adoption is already at 88% in legal departments and 89% in recruiting.
That's huge.
It is. These are pure judgment functions. We aren't talking about generating a marketing email. We are talking about an agent that triages a human being's career prospects or flags a critical liability clause in a vendor contract.
Yeah.
When an agent executes a multi-step workflow like that, who signs off on it? It honestly feels like a corporate game of musical chairs.
No, so.
Well, the music is playing at 100 miles an hour, right? These AI agents are making thousands of micro decisions in the background. But when the music stops, say, when there is a class action lawsuit or a massive financial hallucination, no human is sitting in the accountability chair.
That analogy perfectly captures the systemic risk boards are facing right now. And Alexander C. adds a really important technical layer to this on LinkedIn. She pointed out that agentic failures compound.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, if a traditional generative AI model gives you a wrong answer, a human spots it, fixes it, and moves on, the error is isolated. But when an agent makes an autonomous decision, it acts on it. It might send an email, update a database, and then use that new state to make its next decision.
Oh, man.
The failure doesn't sit still. It cascades through your systems. This makes traditional point-in-time assurance, like auditing a model once before launch, completely useless, You have to govern the decisions across the entire life cycle.
So if boards are suddenly waking up to the terrifying fact that they don't legally own the decisions being made inside their own companies, they're simultaneously waking up to an even more severe reality. They don't even own the infrastructure those agents live on.
Geopolitics enters the chat.
Yeah, exactly. Think about what happened on June 12th. Greg Malpass and Ali Yuksel brought up this massive incident where the U.S. government ordered Anthropic to shut down its top models worldwide due to cybersecurity concerns.
I remember that day. Pure chaos.
With zero warning, thousands of European organizations lost access to their models. But more importantly, they lost their AI's constitutional memory.
Right.
Wait, help me visualize this for a second, though. Are we saying that if an American API goes down, a European company doesn't just lose a software tool, they lose the accumulated business logic of their entire operation?
That is exactly what happens. And that concept of constitutional memory is so vital to understand. Mm-hmm. Because when you deeply integrate a frontier model into your enterprise, you aren't just using an out-of-the-box product anymore. You are fine-tuning it. You are feeding it your corporate rules, your specific operational parameters, your audit trails. All of that custom reasoning only existed inside an infrastructure that Europe didn't own and couldn't protect. Daniel Usitalo noted that losing access to a frontier model like Fable 5 overnight is the ultimate undeniable case for Europe building sovereign AI.
Right. And Dung Hong pointed out a really dangerous geopolitical mismatch here. Europe is incredibly successful at exporting its rulebook. We always talk about the Brussels effect, right?
Sure, where countries all over the world just copy European tech regulations.
Exactly. But Europe isn't exporting its models or its compute infrastructure. So we are basically renting our society's cognitive infrastructure from a geopolitical landlord who can change the locks without notice.
That's a great way to put it.
But can Europe actually catch up? F. Garrick Verhees suggested building massive data centers.
Mm-hmm.
Is pouring money into server farms enough to solve a sovereignty issue?
Building data centers is a necessary prerequisite. I mean, you have to have them.
Yeah.
But it's fundamentally not the whole solution. You need the models, the specialized silicon, and the talent.
Okay.
Maximilian Henning highlighted a really critical dynamic here. Washington is actively tightening control over its AI firms and selectively squeezing Europe out of access to the absolute cutting-edge frontier models, limiting them only to quote-unquote trusted partners under strict conditions.
Wow.
It's all about controlling the threshold of computing power, or FLOPs. This proves that digital independence is no longer just an economic ambition for Europe. It is a baseline survival metric. You simply cannot enforce a sovereign rulebook on a cognitive engine that you do not control.
Okay, let's bring this down from the geopolitical level back to the executives and IT leaders listening to this deep dive right now. You've got regulatory minefields, you've got board-level liability for compounding agentic errors, and you've got geopolitical landlords threatening to change the locks on your infrastructure.
It's a lot to deal with.
It is. Yet despite all of this, businesses are still rapidly adopting AI. Why? Because the financial stakes are simply too high to sit it out. But the nature of that adoption has completely changed. Business value has officially replaced adoption theater.
Thank goodness.
Right. Michelle Rao offered a really sharp critique of this shift. She says executives need to stop celebrating adoption metrics. Stop counting the number of software licenses you bought or how many prompts your employees wrote this week. Start asking what KPIs actually moved. Did your cycle time improve? Did your expense ratios actually drop?
This is exactly where the maturity of the market is showing, and it really just comes down to basic unit economics.
Yeah.
Thepke Cornelissen made a brilliant observation about this. She said, AI models now run on a meter.
What does she mean by that?
Well, during the early experimental phase, AI was often just a flat subscription fee, $20 a month, whatever. Now, if you are building enterprise applications via APIs, every capable model charges per token, per task.
Mm.
You are pushed for the compute power required for every single action. This usage meter acts as a mirror for the organization. It exposes which automated work actually creates real value and which work just looks busy. You are literally paying for every decision you hand to the machine.
And how you build the architecture behind that machine determines if you go bankrupt running it. David Linthicum shared a striking example of this.
I read that one, yeah.
He looked at three different enterprises that solved the exact same AI problem. They achieved the exact same business value, but one company's architecture cost $1 million, The second cost $3 million, and the third cost $10 million.
Just wild.
It's insane. Architecture discipline literally dictates your ROI.
And we should probably unpack how that actually happens. A $10 million architecture is usually what happens when a company blindly sends every single internal data query to a massive premium frontier model API. They pay top-tier token costs for simple tasks.
Just burning money?
Yeah. Exactly. A $1 million architecture, on the other hand, utilizes smart routing. They might use a cheap, locally hosted open source model for 90% of basic sorting tasks and only call the premium API for highly complex reasoning.
Oh, that makes sense.
Furthermore, they optimize their retrieval augmented generation pipelines, or RG, so they aren't unnecessarily feeding massive documents into the context window over and over again. You cannot just throw premium cloud compute at a problem and call it a win.
That makes perfect sense. And part of that architectural discipline is also how you map the AI to your human organization. Katia Cassano issued a really strong warning against rebuilding your organizational silos inside your AI.
Yes.
Like, if you are a CTO listening right now, look at your org chart. If you are deploying a dedicated sales bot and a separate finance bot and an isolated support bot, you are literally just recreating your company's departmental walls in code.
Exactly. The leading edge of enterprise architecture is running one shared AI operating system that reconfigures itself per task, drawing from a shared data foundation.
Because if we just deploy siloed bots, aren't we just building faster horses instead of inventing the car? We're taking our own dysfunction, our own communication bottlenecks between departments, and just automating them.
Precisely. You're just speeding up the inefficiencies that already exist.
Mm-hmm.
And to make things even more complex, the underlying technology is shifting again.
Of course it is.
Giorgio Natili points out that basic generative AI, you know, the models that just predict the next word to write an email or summarize a document, that's now just the floor. It's a commodity. The real competitive gap is being formed by organizations building neurosymbolic reasoning systems.
Okay, neurosymbolic reasoning. We hear that term thrown around a lot, but let's demystify it for the audience. What does that actually mean in practice?
It's actually a fascinating combination of two different types of AI. Generative neural networks are incredible at guessing patterns, but they are terrible at strict logic, which is why they hallucinate facts. Symbolic AI, on the other hand, is the old school approach. It relies on strict, hard-coded logic rules, like if X, then Y. It's highly accurate, but very brittle.
Okay, so it can't handle nuance.
Right, so neurosymbolic reasoning combines them. The neural network acts as the creative, pattern-matching engine, but its outputs are constantly checked against a symbolic logic engine based on your company's actual hard facts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it allows the AI to literally show its math and prove the causal logic behind its decisions, which, as we discussed earlier, is exactly what the EU AI Act requires.
Which naturally leads us to the humans who have to operate these advanced systems.
Yeah.
Because you cannot restructure the foundational technology of a company without radically restructuring the humans doing the work.
Definitely not.
Tricia Srivastava pointed out that the talent market isn't splitting into simple binary categories of winners who use AI and losers who don't. Instead, every single role is being entirely redefined from the ground up.
Yes, and Andreas Horn offered some incredibly practical advice for professionals navigating this transition. He says, do not fear job losses. Instead, focus on mastering the AI tools inside your own specific domain.
So leaning into your niche.
Right, because there is a misconception that the most valuable person in the future is a generic AI engineer sitting in a lab. In reality, the person who successfully maps what an AI agent can do in a highly specialized niche, whether that's forensic accounting or specialized supply chain logistics, is the domain expert.
That makes a lot of sense.
The domain expert understands the messy, unwritten edge cases of the real world that a generic model misses. That combination of deep, narrow domain knowledge and broad AI fluency is the new premium skill.
But the transition to that new reality is causing significant friction, and not everyone is thrilled about it. Sol Rashidi brought up a fascinating cultural data point from recent surveys. 31% of Gen Z feel real anger toward AI in the workplace and in education.
That is a high number.
It is. Now, it would be really easy for an executive to dismiss that as stubborn resistance to change. But Rashidi argues that leaders should see this as honest feedback. This is a generation actively trying to protect the value of actual learning. They don't want to just be handed an answer by an agent. They want to understand how the answer was formed.
That is really interesting.
Yeah, it makes me think of navigation.
Yeah.
It's exactly like handing a teenager a GPS system before they ever learn how to read a physical map or understand the concept of street grids. Yes, the technology gets them to the destination faster, but they know deep down that relying purely on the machine is robbing them of a foundational understanding of their own environment.
I think that is a very profound way to look at it. And it ties directly into a brilliant insight from Dr. Annette Doms. She notes that for centuries, human intelligence and the ability to produce a correct answer was scarce, and therefore it was highly valued.
Mm-hmm.
Now, AI is making intelligence abundant and incredibly cheap. If you need a marketing strategy, a block of code, or a legal summary, you can get it instantly for fractions of a cent.
Right.
But when answers become cheap commodities, the ability to ask the right questions becomes priceless. Human judgment, the wisdom to challenge a model's assumptions, and the critical thinking required to distinguish signal from noise, those are the skills that will actually define value in an AI-saturated workforce.
As we wrap up this deep dive into the reality of AI in 2026, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought from Ben Torben Nielsen. He expands on this exact idea that generative AI made knowledge cheap, and he says it forces a really uncomfortable question for every professional. You have to ask yourself, does your specific field of work operate like TV repair, or does it operate like quantum physics?
Ooh, I like that.
Right? Think about it. A TV repair person doesn't necessarily need to understand the fundamental electronics of every single microchip on the board. They just need to know which component to replace to get the screen working again. Generative AI is perfect for that kind of modular replacement level work.
Yep.
But in quantum physics, you cannot just look up a breakthrough. The deep internal understanding of the mechanics is the actual work.
It raises a critical defining question for everyone listening. In the next decade, as autonomous AI agents increasingly take over the execution of tasks, knowing which camp your career falls into, the replaceable component camp or the deep understanding camp, will entirely dictate your professional trajectory.
It all circles back to the muddy diagnostic landscape we are navigating right now. The old paradigm of measuring success by simply asking, hey, are we using AI? It's completely dead. We have to look at the rigorous mechanisms of governance, the compounding risks of liability, the efficiency of our enterprise architecture, and ultimately, the irreplaceable wisdom of the humans in the loop.
Well said.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on ICT and tech, digital products and services, cloud, sustainability, and green ICT, defense tech, and health tech. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Make sure to subscribe and keep asking the hard questions. Until next time.